a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, enough of this nonsense. Let's talk Muppets. Ben Anderson joins us now. Nonsense. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
Oh, man, let's get to business.
You know, I said earlier in the show when we were talking about the Christmas movie bracket, like Ben is like the most even-keeled, humble, just chill dude on the planet.
Wonderful human being.
Wonderful human being, wonderful father, just an impressive dude, the best beat writer, jazz insider at KSLSports.com, tremendous radio host, but pretty unflappable as far as what I've seen. Until we brought up the Muppets, and then, you know, you had the torch and the pitchfork outside the gates ready to burn the whole place down.
It's a great movie. It's a sacred movie for people my age. So I'm surprised Lloyd hasn't been carrying that torch for me or jumping in the mob with me. Because, yeah, for people my age, I think that was a good introduction to kind of that crossover between nostalgia and Christmas and musicals. Michael Caine, it's a hit.
So you weren't upset about it being on the bracket. You were just more upset about where it was seated. Is that you were upset
well,
about the first
going up against A Christmas Story, which like those are two top five movies on this list, at least two top 10 movies. So for them to go head to head in the first round is crazy. I mean, put it up against Christmas with the Cranks or some movie that doesn't belong on any list. It's just a throwaway year in and year out movie. I was surprised to see who it had to go up against.
By the way, apparently there are people that like Christmas with the Cranks because it's close to knocking out Gremlins.
Gremlins, I know a lot of people kind of have a mixed relationship with because it is very Christmassy, but it's very horror-y also, and I think that scares some people off.
Oh, man, it is horror-y.
Well, it scared you as a kid, didn't
it? Oh, Ben, I didn't sleep for 4 years, 5 years. I kept thinking that Gizmo or Stripe was going to walk through my bedroom door, and I didn't even want to see Gizmo, like walking on two legs and doing his little singing noises and little fur balls popping out of his back. It freaked me out.
The whole soliloquy about getting stuck in the chimney and dying is
yes.
Grim.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's pretty dark.
Was that Phoebe Cates?
Yeah, it was Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
Well, horrifying movie, but a very real Christmas movie. And it should be Christmas with the Cranks. Nobody likes Christmas with the Cranks.
I don't even know if I've seen Christmas with
Tim
the Cranks.
Tim Allen doesn't even like Christmas with the Cranks.
Four Christmases in there? Like, no.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
All right. Okay, so if you were to just seed me your top four Christmas movies.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Christmas Story.
Yep.
Yeah.
Die Hard.
Nice.
And I'm going to go with...
No Christmas Vacation.
Miracle on 34th, Christmas
man,
Vacation.
It's so hard.
No Home Alone, huh?
Two. I'm probably going to go with Christmas Carol. I'm going to go with not Muppet Christmas Carol, though. I'm going to go with the one from the 50s with Alistair Sim. It's like the last black and white one, and it's so good. But, man, it's really hard to not have, Miracle, Home Alone, Christmas Vacation, because they all belong there.
Well, by the way, that Christmas Carol is paired up with Polar Express.
Polar Express is the scariest Christmas movie because the lifeless eyes of those children, it's like Jaws. It is so terrifying to look at those kids throughout that movie. That is a haunting film.
Children of the Corn right there in that movie.
Yeah, exactly right. These kids are being spawned out of something and it's not human.
Have you seen the what is it? The one from the guy from Stranger Things where he's Santa Claus, Violent Christmas?
I haven't seen that one yet. No, with the John
just
Leguizamo,
barely,
right?
Yeah,
I
just barely came out. Yeah,
I haven't seen it yet. I will see it before the holiday.
I like it. I like it. All right, so let's talk some jazz. How much of the recent struggles can you pin directly onto the loss of the point guard in Mike Conley, and how much of that gets resolved once Mike Conley gets back in the lineup?
I think five of the Jazz last eight games have been decided by single digits, which means they were close in the fourth quarter. And late in the game, that's where you need Mike Conley. You know, that's where Mike Conley's going to shine. And you know, you looked at the issues they had against Portland, just in total inability to execute over the last minute. They had four turnovers in 60 seconds. Like, that's all Mike Conley. That's all Mike Conley's job and where he needs to step up and where they rely on him and where he's brought his value. So I would probably say, you know, maybe 70%, 75% of the Jazz issue comes down to that. Maybe 20% of it's just how insane that schedule was and how it finally kind of caught up to them being on the road, playing so many back-to-backs already this season. And then teams adjusting. Teams have caught up to the Jazz as well and know what to expect and know how to pressure Lowry Markkanen in certain ways where he needs to say, hey, this is my team and I need to be the man. And he needs to. He does need to take that step now because he's shown he can do it. Now he has to want to do it every night. So the majority of it is the loss of Mike Conley. That doesn't mean when he comes back, whether that's tomorrow or Friday or Saturday, that they start winning games, you know, big 10-3 just like they did to start the year. But it certainly makes things easier.
How big of an asset is Colin Sexton, in your opinion, Ben?
He's good. He really is a nice player, and his high moments are really intriguing. And the development I think he's already made this season, where his big knock in Cleveland was that he just had blinders on and he didn't see his teammates. And I do think you still see that. I mean, there are stretches where he misses guys that are like obvious kickout threes, obvious shots at the rim. He doesn't run fast breaks super well sometimes, where you just think like, hey, you need to be a point guard. Why are you not doing that? And it's because, you know, he's still young. Everywhere he's been, including when he got to Cleveland, they just said, just go be an offensive player. Just go be a scorer. You don't need to get guys involved. You know, at Alabama, the best thing you can do for us is score. In Cleveland, he came in when LeBron was outgoing. The best thing you can do is go and score points for us. So now he's got to figure out how to do something different. And it just takes a long time, and it takes a lot of reps. So I think he's a nice asset to have going forward. I don't think you're worried about him being a bad signing by any means. I do think you're really happy that Lowry Markkanen has developed into what he's turned into coming out of the Donovan Mitchell trade, because it's really smooth, that transition, which hasn't been perfect for Colin Sexton at times, but it's been good enough.
So let's just be honest with the landscape of the NBA. Officials are going to treat Greg Popovich a little different than they're going to treat Will Hardy. And Hardy picked up the technical after the horrible no call the other night. But what is the process for a player or for a coach, especially a young one like Will Hardy, to earn the respect to get calls down the stretch in games?
Yeah, I think some of it's time. Some of it's just being there. And it's pretty amazing how contained he's been, because the players have talked about how excitable he can be behind the scenes. And I don't mean he's out of control, but, you know, he can get on you, it sounds like. So he has that type of energy that you would expect out of a 34-year-old head coach. So I guess I was surprised that it took him this long to get a technical foul. But he has to show that, you know, he's willing to step up to his guys or step up for his guys and show up for them. And I won't be surprised if it becomes a little bit more common. I don't think he wants to get a technical every week, but I bet once you've kind of broken that dam, that those come a little bit more freely than they have in the past.
We have a pretty significant trade landmark coming up December 15th, where players that were acquired in the offseason could be moved. I brought up Colin Sexton and kind of included in that conversation. What do you expect to happen on December 15th with any of the other Jazz players?
Probably nothing immediately. I bet you there will be some interest in players, and, you know, a lot of that might have to do with how comfortable are the Jazz with their center rotation if Kelly Olynyk weren't there. And right now it's not all that promising. Now, Walker Kessler is very good, but are you going to play Yudoka Azubuike 20 minutes behind Walker Kessler? I don't know if you're at that point yet. So I think, you know, before you were to move somebody like Olynyk, who I think probably has value around the NBA, probably, you know, he's still affordable next year. I think he's got a team option. It's over $10 million, but it's not crazy. You could gladly bring him back, and he's not going to hurt you in whatever you want to do. If you want to win a bunch of games, I think he's suitable. And if you want to not win a bunch of games, I think he's amenable to that. So I think in that sense, you don't have to move anybody. You don't have to trade anybody. But if the right deal comes along and a team says, man, we're really missing a guy who can play both front court positions and is shooting the heck out of the ball and can do a little bit of playmaking, we think he gets us closer to a title or deeper into the playoffs, I think he would listen to offers for guys. But I don't know how much Danny Ainge is just, you know, jumping on the phone. Justin Zanuck really is jumping on the phone to say, hey, it's a fire sale. We're trying to move people, especially guys they've gotten this last, you know, 4 months, 5 months that you needed to get to that December 15th trade deadline before you could open it up.
Do the Lakers getting reasonably better, and I think they've won like 8 out of their last 10, does that make them maybe a little bit more ambitious to revisit some of the trades conversations that they had with the Jazz before the season?
Yeah, I kind of was thinking about that because you're right. I mean, Anthony Davis is playing out of his mind all of a sudden, and you say, huh, well, if he's playing like that and LeBron James is still LeBron James, I mean, he's maybe not LeBron James from the Cleveland era, but he's not a bad player. He's still a top 10 player in the NBA, and Anthony Davis is playing like a top 10 player right now. Well, that's a recipe for a title. And if they were willing now to give up future draft picks, yeah, I'm sure a Mike Conley or a Jordan Clarkson or whoever is available for those types of teams that could use a little bit more depth and could allow, you know, LeBron to have a few more nights off. So I would think they would have to, and I think it would be smart to do it. And maybe you don't want to make crazy major changes where you're bringing in, you know, two starters, three starters, but maybe you are bringing in a couple of guys off the bench or one starter and a guy off the bench, which the Jazz have the assets and, you know, the ability to make trades like that where it could benefit them and put them back into the Western Conference conversation, because I don't see an obvious favorite right now in the West. I mean, and Phoenix has the best record, but I don't really believe in Phoenix. We've seen that they're pretty soft when it gets to the postseason. Dallas has really struggled with the success they had last year. Something's wrong in Golden State. They can't win on the road. We'll see what they do tomorrow night when they're in Salt Lake City. But it's open, and I wouldn't rule out the Lakers from being competitive in every playoff series if AD and LeBron are healthy. And then you put a little more talent around them, and they could be very good. They could absolutely make a run at it.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about this six-game stretch that they've got in front of them going up till December 17th. Golden State tomorrow, then you got Minnesota Friday. You got Denver on Saturday. On that back into back-to-back, you get on a flight and head out there. You've got New Orleans two times in a row, December 13th and then Thursday, December 15th, and then you finish that stretch with Milwaukee. Let's say that six-game stretch, just take a look at it. And I don't know what needs to happen anymore with the Utah Jazz. I've really lost touch with what should, what needs to happen, what expectations there should be. Do you even look at a six-game stretch and worry about the outcomes of it at this point?
I don't worry about the outcomes, you know, wins and losses. I do think the Jazz are valuing very highly right now close games, those types of situations where you can allow Colin Sexton to learn what it's like with Mike Conley off the floor, what Lauri Markkanen has to do late in the game if he wants to be a winner, and where you can develop those types of things, which he probably didn't get to do at all in Chicago, did a little bit of in Cleveland, but was never the man. So the value of those games where, okay, let's just take Golden State tomorrow. He's probably going to be defended by, speaking of Markkanen, by Draymond Green. So how are you going to finish that game? How do you find a way to win that type of game if it's close? And like I said, Golden State's been bad on the road, so they're probably going to give you that opportunity to be close there. You're going to have to do the same thing against Minnesota. You know, what can these guys do against a team that's young, beatable, but has some talent out there with Rudy Gobert and Anthony Edwards. Denver, we know, is good. New Orleans is very good, is weirdly not being talked about at all for how good they've been this season. And then Milwaukee, I think, is still probably the NBA title favorite. So those are all really good opportunities for the Jazz to win and get, you know, experience against good teams. And you hope they're close. And if they don't win, it's just fine. They are in a weird spot in the standings where you don't want to be. They don't want to be, I think, you know, 6-12 or 7, I should say, because that's the play-in, to about 12, where you're just flirting with the idea of the postseason. I think you want to be firmly in or you want to be firmly out, but you don't have to decide that right now. So through January, if you can have a lot of these close games that are competitive, I think the Jazz will take that and they'll like the experience their guys are getting.
What do you, your bird's eye view of the Minnesota debacle? Minnesota coming into town on Friday, but how have things gone so poorly there?
I'm not terribly surprised in the sense that we knew how difficult it was for the Jazz to build around Rudy Gobert and how much work they put into it, to the point where last year, Quinn Snyder several times, I don't know if it was out of frustration, but he'd kind of get those moments of you know, being really candid with the media when he would just say, look, this team is built around Rudy. Like, we've designed this team to succeed with him. And you go back and you listen to Mike Conley talk about his struggles when he first got to Utah, and it was just, hey, we're supposed to pass off everybody we have defensively to Rudy. And then when it didn't work in the postseason or when teams adjusted, it really fell apart. And so you recognize, like, Rudy is hard to build around and hard to win with. But when you figure it out, it's really worthwhile. But Quinn Snyder was a great coach and knew how to do it. I do think they underrated in Minnesota the number of backbends the Jazz did, the amount of work they did to really promote what Rudy Gobert does best. And it never really made sense why they would think that they would be willing to do that, or the players on the roster would be willing to do that, and Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards and some of the other guys they have, to support a new guy who honestly his resume is not, you know, significantly better than Karl Anthony Towns, who's been there since day one, or Anthony Edwards, who was a former number one overall pick. Those guys aren't going to take a backseat to Rudy Gobert. And if you know Rudy, you know he's not really going to take a backseat either. So you've got a lot of unique players that I think you need unique players around to win with those guys individually. And they underrated how difficult that was going to be. And now I question, you know, how quickly will they look to make a major move? And I don't think they can trade Rudy Gobert because I don't think anyone else is going to try and do what Minnesota has tried to do. Would they ever consider trading Karl Anthony Towns? Would they consider moving forward with Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert? Those are very tough questions that I don't think they're going to have to answer this year, especially with Towns' injury. But it has not gone well, and the fact that it's not gone well so far gives me real hesitancy of believing it will ever go well.
Ben, how many times do you think the Jazz big picture targets moved just through these first 26 games?
I don't know if it's set yet, so I guess probably constantly. Okay. You know, I'm sure in some sense they were going to say, let's see what we're like after the first 10 games, because we know how brutal they were. And it was, if we're 1-9, well, let's lean into that a little bit more. And, you know, let's, you know, maybe play Ochai Agbaji a little bit more, play some of these young guys and give them more opportunities. But I do, like I said, I think they really do value the idea of these close games, the idea of these guys getting real game situation. Because, man, I look at Houston, and I see that they're, I mean, you might have the standings up in front of you. I don't right now. They're worst in the West. They probably got, they're right there with San Antonio. Probably got 5 wins on the season, 6 wins on the season. And it's just like, you know, if you're never actually rolling the ball down the lane and hitting pins, and you're just saying, well, you're just working on getting your technique, but you never see whether it matters or not. It's just, what are you doing? What is Jalen Green learning in Houston right now? That he can score 30 points and have zero consequence for anything? Like, okay. Like, one of the best things that happened for Donovan Mitchell was that he stepped into a team in the Jazz and they won right away. And some of that was Donovan, but some of it was they had a team that was ready to go and Rudy Gobert was ready to win. And so the expectation was, hey, Donovan, if you want to win, or if you want to play, you've got to help us keep winning. And he did that. And it advanced his career so quickly where, you know, by year two, year three, year four, he was a perennial all-star, a borderline all-NBA player. And none of his stats were empty calories. They were real numbers. So until you're winning games, I don't really care what your numbers are all that much. And I think the Jazz do recognize that and say, we like that Colin Sexton's having to learn to win and play well on a team that wins games. And You're doing the same thing with Lowry Markkanen, who's still only 26 years old, and Malik Beasley just turned 26. And Talen Horton-Tucker is getting benched because he's not helping the team win games, as opposed to just saying, no, you play regardless. It doesn't matter. We're not holding you in check. Like, you have to do the right things to see the floor. And I think there is value in that in the long run versus just the free-for-all, free minutes that don't have any consequence. Because that builds a lot of entitlement, and I think the Jazz are trying to avoid that as much as you can in today's NBA.
So I know this is a very anti-sports radio thing to do because, you know, we get the MO of trying to get everybody angry and upset and offended by comments. But the Donovan Mitchell comment, no knock on Utah, but I'm having fun again playing basketball. And I know a lot of people were upset about that or tried to, you know, get angry about it. And I really wasn't upset about that. I wasn't bothered by it because I know like how much of a toll the last couple of years were on guys. I mean, you know, Joe Ingles would probably say the same thing, you know, maybe not Rudy Gobert right now, but a lot of those guys are probably like, you know what? That was hard last year. That was not a lot of fun over the last couple of years. And it's a new venue, a city that loves you, that doesn't know all your warts yet. I can understand why he's having fun right now.
Yeah, I understand why he's having fun right now. And it's not a knock on Utah or the Jazz. It had grown stale. And you could see, I think, really early last season that something had spoiled in there. The milk had been left out too long, and the Jazz had just spoiled as a group. And they didn't take steps to fix it because they always assumed health or the regular season didn't matter or whatever they tried to, you know, sell or say was the issue. It never remedied itself the way I think they had hoped it would. And then they were unable at the trade deadline to make any significant moves to upgrade the roster. So I understand totally what he's saying. I do also kind of have to look at it from a normal human work perspective. And our job is unique. You know, we get to cover sports teams, and there's a ton of fun built into it in general. And doing radio is fun. But, I mean, Scotty, you know it. Hans, you know it. Not every pregame show is fun. Not every postgame show is fun. Not every road game is easy to cover. It's not always easy to watch 80 games plus, you know, however many college football games and college basketball games. And you still have to do your job. So that would be my fear for Donovan Mitchell, is that the fun isn't always going to be there night in and night out. And that can't dictate whether or not you're a great player or not. It can't allow you to get eliminated in the second round or the first round of the playoffs against a team that doesn't have Luka Doncic because you're not having fun. Like, you're not getting paid to have fun. You're getting paid to go win basketball games. So I would worry about that a little bit if I was Cleveland, because they're going to have missteps along the way. They're going to get eliminated early in the playoffs along the way. They're not going to go to the finals this year in Cleveland. How does he respond to that when it's not fun there either? Does he need to go somewhere else and get back to that drug that's the first year of being somewhere where it is fun? Or does he buckle down and say, hey, the fun part is working through the adversity. The fun part is getting through the hard part and winning in the face of everyone saying you can't do it. That's the real fun part. That's not just the popcorn and the easy flavor at the beginning of a movie. You know, it's got to be more than that. There's got to be something else. And that would be my concern with what he said. But it has nothing to do with the Jazz. It has everything to do with Donovan Mitchell.
Well, Ben, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the time, and I look forward to catching up again here soon.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
You got it. Ben Anderson, Jazz Insider for KSLSports.com and co-host with Jake Scott every day from 10 to 12 right here on The Zone.
And
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.